never in the Sedgemoor area. They've been there a day or two before we joined them with transport. They'd gone up a long way by train, you see. And they were in position at Sedgemoor on the outskirts of this village. And we were there quite a while because the front line was about 15, 20 miles further up towards towards the road that took you through to Bizerta, actually. There was a railway line running through. The railway line ran right through Sedgemoor village. And we were in the woods. There was vast areas of cork woods there, and we were able to be nicely covered with transport dotted all over the place in the cork forests. But the mud, dear me, to get there, each time you went out of the woods where you allotted to park, it was a plough through woods. These Canadian trucks, they had very good chains to put on the wheels, and a very good system with a heavy chain, which would be meant to use for ice and snow, spoiled, but they were invaluable in mud, because we were out in and out from this lager area, up the line each night, you know, with food. With the rations for the lads, they were.
Battalion was in the front line now.
Yes, they were in the front line, on one side of a range of hills, and Jerry was just over there on the other side, lobbing a few shells over each day, and that's all was happening for about a month, about 4 weeks, before anything really active blew up.
And you were carrying stuff up every night.
Yes, every night there was a convoy went up. No lights on. Hairpin bends again. When I saw that road in daylight that we'd been travelling up night after night, coming back, my heart nearly stopped. You couldn't see the bottom. No fences or anything. And we'd been paddling up there each night with the rations. And we used to find the lads, and they were all dotted about, and the A Company had their office in a tunnel. It was a disused line, this railway line, and they were in a tunnel, but the lads were all in trenches. A miserable blooming time they must have had, because there was a lot of wet at the time.
The weather was bad.
Yes, it's January, rainy season it was. And
you say you were carrying rations up.
No, compote boxes that to cook them on or whatever, eat them raw or whatever, eat them up. Well, they were all cooked, you see. This compote stuff was all cooked.
What was in it?
Very good food, I can tell you. Lovely food. Everything was. There was breakfast. There was, you know, the soup tins, about the size of these soup tins we have now. The breakfast was beautiful, baked, cooked. It was all streaky bacon, and it was packed long ways just to fit a tin. The tin was chock-a-block, and it was dished out. The rations, as I think I mentioned before, it was so well arranged that it was supply for 7 days for. A supply of one day's food for 7 men, that was it. Or if it was 14 days, there was some number 14 days, and that was to supply 14 men, you see. And that's with the rations. But they were dished out. When they got them in these boxes, they're like orange boxes. And they were nailed together. And then the company with the You could, yes, you could, because when you got to a place where you were a while, it wasn't long before your kooks knocked up a fire system of bricks, a long trench with metal plates across the top. And they used to start these, they were like big blow lamps, huge blow lamps. They'd put one of these, light it up, and it's belting away along this tunnel, and they could have billy cans all the way along on top. That was down at Bechelon, you see.
Were you travelling from Bechelon or from battalion headquarters?
No, but at Bechelon.
And they were bringing
them? Yes,
in addition to...
You had your quartermaster stores at Bechelon, you see. The food was all brought into there by the three tunnels and that.
In addition to food, were you carrying anything else up to the companies?
Well, we had rations on as well, ammunition as well. They drew, well, if they wanted ammunition, we had to supply of ammunition as well. You see, there was three trucks for air company, two trucks for air company, you see. No, we had all three trucks then, didn't we? Of course we did. But this was a nightly affair.
And did you, your three trucks, did you just go to battalion headquarters? And the stuff was picked up by ration parties, or did you actually go to the company?
No, we picked our rations up from our Bechelon.
And you took them to?
They were looking for us when we got up to where the troops were, you see.
Was that to the company that you'd taken?
Yeah.
Direct
to A company, yeah. There was a Donar led the convoy each time, and he knew where all the other people were, you see. But he was the only one with a little light on his motorbike, of course. It was easier for a motorcyclist to drive like that than what in the cab of a car, you see. We had no light at all in front. You're just following you had a little tiny light on the diff, a big, great big differential at the back of the truck in front of you, you see. And that was lit up, but it was like a fag end. you couldn't get too far back, and you couldn't see the truck in front of you.
So it's obviously too dangerous to move during the day.
Oh, you would have been straight, because we had no air cover at all for weeks, because we had no landing areas, hard landing rooms. The only airport was what the Jerry's had on the outskirts of Tunis, and of course he was up in his planes every day. Strafing these woods we were in, even Bechelon, every day they were over. They used to come belting over low the tops of the trees. They couldn't maybe see you from the plains, but they knew you were all in there. It was frightening, by gum it was. We had a system down at Bechelon, whereas they put on the outskirts of a stretch of wood, they put watch people from the troops. And they had whistles, and if they heard or saw aircraft approaching these various woods where we were, they blew their whistles violently and warned us, and everybody took whatever cover they could find. And the thing was, you soon got to know in the southwest where the sound was coming from, because before you knew where you were, the damn things were just over the treetops, you know. Machine guns belting and cutting a swathe through the damp trees, and some people weren't looking, they didn't get out of all of the aircraft, and there were lots of casualties. But if you were lucky, well, you were lucky.
Were you ever shelled on one of your nightly journeys or mortared?
No, not the time, no, there was no, we were never attacked on our way up. They were just, well, you see, there was lobbing a few shells from his side to where the infantrymen were, you see. And they were taking out patrols and trying to get a bit, draw his fire and find out how strong he was and all this. And there was Green Hill and the Twin Tits, and there were various names for the various hills you could see in daylight, you know. And there was nothing happened at all. This was, quite a bit. We carted Dunnock wire and all sorts up to the front. behind on the convoy up to the line from the echelon. There was a lot of this twisting and turning, you know. There was one point there was a little, there'd been a narrow bridge, and there were just two posts, each one of a stone erection at each side of the road, you see, and it was a pretty dark night. And one of the lads was, one of them had broken down. His truck wouldn't start, somewhere up at the top, and to get back, and just we carried our tow, had a very good tow chain on the front of every wagon, fastened round the bumper bar, this big solid bumper bar. And if you're in trouble, hook onto another truck, you see. Yeah, he said, no, it didn't take any time at all, they just unhook this tow bar, put it under the next truck. Well, this truck couldn't start it up at the top to get back to the echelon, so he was hooked up to another truck. And the truck that he was pulling, we found this out when we all got back. He'd seen the, he must have got a bit distant away from the truck in front. Saw one of these stone pillars that was the bridge. They went the wrong side of it. This was the truck that was pulling the other truck. And he went over the top into this stream away down. And the lad behind that was fastened to him with a tow bar, he saw him, what had happened to him, he just ran everything on, and he managed to stop, and there he was. And the truck we went next day to recovery. Two or three of us went up. It wasn't far from the echelon. And there he was, his bonnet was just about touching the bottom. And the other truck was up at the top, hanging on to him with a tow bar. Anyway, we got him back up. I don't know how, but we got some more gear from somewhere, lifting gear or something.
Did you bring anything back in the trucks from company lines?
No, not really. Not that length of time we were doing this. There was nothing to bring back, really. We must have been injured people, I don't know. Well, if they had any injured, they would have been picked up by ambulances, you see.
When did you know or surmise that a major attack was going to be made in Sedgemoor? Have more work to do.
Oh yes, alright, it was very chaotic when that happened. We heard, well, they took our battalion out of the line, and we were being relieved. They'd been there a month, and they were being relieved by some of the outfits, and they were brought right back to Centenarian area. And they were going to be moved back to go somewhere that was safer way back. The CO disappeared with each officer commanding companies to look for a spot where they were going to take the battalion in order to delouse them and have all the clothes taken. He took all your clothes off and all went through a delousing thing. We're all stripped off wherever it was when this happened. And he was off. And the balloon had gone up at the back. They'd attacked this new lot that had taken over from us that had been there a month. And they'd got right round the back of here. And he was said, you all knew where we are. They were way up behind here. And there was a unit of French troops. He sorted them out, and they soon fled. And he was breaking through. He was going, well, he did take Sedgemoor actually. And that was about a month after they'd been in the line. And the CO, it was hard luck for him, mate, but I suppose he was deemed to have made a mistake in taking all the officer commanding companies, of course, when the attack came, and our lot had. They were going to be taken out of the line, the poor devils, and instead of that, they had to form an attack. They attacked early morning, very early morning, from Sedgemoor village, and the first approach to the hills where the enemy was bog. It was horrible, I know, because we carted stuff across. Well, those lads, they took everybody except the drivers of the transport. And of course, you had to leave them behind because But we had plenty to do. We spent, before that attack was going to go off from the bottom, after they broke through the rest of the people on the hill, these boxes of hand grenades, they used to have to prime them, you see, in the boxes. You've seen the hand grenade, you know all about them. They have a little, like a pencil goes in. That's a primer. Until you put that in, it's not active. We had these boxes, we dished out in our trucks in Beerslow, two or three boxes of hand grenades to each truck, and we spent all night. I, in my truck, with my driver's mate, put a curtain over the windscreen. We had a little light inside the cab, you see, otherwise we couldn't have the light on. And we spent the whole night, most of the night anyway, priming these, what is it, opening a box, taking each one out, opening it up. We had to clean them and all, they were so waxed up to prevent them rusting or anything. I presume we had to clean the damn striker pin. The arm, where you pull the pin out to let the arm go to make them active. They wouldn't shift. They were waxed up. Well, we clean them. We spent there all night long. Making all these grenades ready for use, you see. And the attack was going to go off in the morning. And then we had to take breakfast. We carried breakfast out to Sedgemoor into the village where the lads were all camped ready for going in the attack. At 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, this one. And then it started. We lost a hell of a lot of people and all that same day.
Were you able to watch the attack going?
We saw a lot of it.
What was happening? What were you seeing?
Well, bursts of things bursting, you know. Smoke going up it. You could see the machine gun nests from above, and they were firing down over. And you could see our lads moving about as well. And there was an awful lot, well, a lot killed there. And he was in the commanding position, you see. The French had fled, and another battalion was just about decimated.
Was this the Sherwood Foresters? I think they'd gone in, were ahead of you.
Yeah, they were in our brigade, yes. 139 brigade. There was the Durhams, the Leicesters, and the Foresters, that's right. That's right. And that was Sedgemoor. Well, we were just being pushed back and pushed back and pushed back.
And what was happening to you as the drivers?
Well, it wasn't long. Well, we were pushed back 20-25 miles after Sedgemoor. And that was when our battalion was left. Total complement of about 80 men. And that was all that was left of the 16 Durhams. They gave us these figures, and so they weren't a fighting unit, you see, and they had to wait for back away in the woods, well, to get them up to where the mine was, as they talk about, at Jebel Aviod, that was, and that was when I was dispatched in the truck to join the Paras. They'd come onto the scene.
Before we get to that, what were the men saying about things that
have
happened?
Not a lot. You couldn't learn a lot. There wasn't many left to learn from. I did learn a lot. I and my little mate, Clary, as I already said, they took the driver's mates and everybody, put them into the attack, you see. All except the drivers. The CO wasn't there over this first day. He only arrived back tonight with all the OCs. And the poor, after the second day, he sat on a damn fallen tree. And he never moved from it. He was watching what was going on with his glasses up there. And he should have been leading it, you high echelon.
And his, was it common knowledge, had his nerve gone, or?
No. He took all these men back to find a parking place for them, for the battalions, yes, to be taken to, for a rest and a clean up and break from the front.
And he didn't have taken all those officers.
Well, he probably shouldn't have taken all the OCs.
So the attack in effect was under the command of second in command of the
corps? All of them, yeah, yes. Several of the officers were killed there and now.
What happened to Colonel Blair because of this?
He disappeared straight away.
Sent him off?
Yes. I came across him later. Later, much later, after I'd been gone back to Africa ill with jaundice, infective hepatitis, and I looked about from arsehole to breakfast time.
And he spoke to him. Did he mention Sedgemeyer?
Yes. I was back, this is a long time after, well over a year after, and I'd gone, I didn't get back to my unit, you see, after the Volturno had been little, and well, on parade, I was in NADHQ as a driver in Algiers, back in Algiers, and we were going to parade for some big noise. The drivers had to parade, and they all should be taking the parade, but not what was his rank? His
name? Colonel, he was a colonel, wasn't he? Where?
Left-handed colonel, yeah. He comes along the road, brigadier now. They both thrown off the command of the 16th Durham, promoted to brigadier in this HQ. Because he saw my badge, I said, is what battalion were you? I said, 16th battalion. Oh, yes, he says, fine battalion. Passed on. No comments. He didn't want to talk about it.
Who took his place?
Johnny Preston.
And what was he like?
Oh, he was very tough. A little. Plain spoken Yorkshireman. Really, really tough. Very popular he was. The Brigadier Ware was more the pussy type. I suppose he was alright. It was just hard luck that he was faced with this situation. It wasn't really his fault, he was only doing his job. But apparently we heard that he'd been reprimanded and removed from the command.
So you said that after a few days, the paratrooper came and joined.
Yes, yes. I joined the paras and I was with them 5 or 6 weeks.
What were you doing with those?
Oh, general running about, carting men, carting supplies, up and down, back to war. They took a lot of prisoners. They were taking prisoners every day, the paras, and in bunches, you know, a few. And they were brought, when they brought them in on the ground to a company officer, whatever they had in a big house somewhere, and then they were interrogated, the German prisoners or the Italians as well, and then when the battalion had interrogated them, then they had to go back to Brigade HQ, which was about 25 miles away. And I got a lot of journeys back and forth in the palace, taking prisoners.
What state were they in?
Oh, they were very quiet. There wasn't any trouble with them. They were glad the war was over, most of them. There was just one or two nasty little buggers that would do this Nazi salute, you know, and they wouldn't talk and they wouldn't answer a question. And died in the will Nazis, which the majority of them were quite amicable.
Do you know what units they came from? Did you know who
I didn't. They would sort out that when they were interrogating them. I wouldn't know what all the different flashes were. I had a very fun, a very, very interesting incident. When I, as I say, I used to. have a lot of runs with the prisoners back to Brigade HQ, and it was number one battalion I was with, Paris, and first brigade, and they had a Pole. He was a sergeant, being made a sergeant, a Polish fella, and he'd got to England from Poland, and then he joined the British Army, and he was an interpreter. I had him on as an interpreter, you see. And then I'm travelling. He was a kind of nice fellow. He could talk perfect English. And he used to always travel with me, taking his prisoners. And talking one night, and he says, whereabouts in England did you come from then? And I said, a little place called Longford St. John, just out in Darlington. He said, Darlington, he says. My wife lives in Darlington. He said, I married a girl from Darlington. He said she works in Benzies. She had red hair. He said, I might have seen her. Small world, eh?
What were the Paras like?
Oh, they were a grand bunch of fellas. They were a grand bunch of fellas. Mind, you had some excitement, I can tell you. Because their type of fighting was that type of go, you see. They were always attacking. It was hand grenades. That was their big weapon. They used to go out when they were going out. They would go in into the line from the back.
You're saying that they used the hand grenade as a weapon?
An awful lot. They used to go out loaded with them. When the battle rests, they used some right around here. In them blouses, you know. As many as they could carry. And the Italian I was with, they were in a big house on the hillside about half a mile from the main road that went up the valley. This was well back from Sedgemoor now, back to Alton, almost to the junction with the Bibbingia Road. But they had a company office in this big house. And it was a good place to hide the transport and all, because there was a valley running behind a ridge of low hills, and we had the transport up there. But there was a, down in the bottom, you could see them, there was a battery of 25 pounders, and we were fighting this area all the time. And we saw that Jerry had got his artillery guns in action by then, and he was trying to knock out these 25 pounders. He did knock one or two of them out, a few, because we could see what was going on from where we were higher up. And he was knocking them. And then, of course, the Paras decided to move out of this building, because they knew very well that they were going to probably get it next, and they did. No, they started chilling this blooming area that we were in. So they ordered the trucks to come round from where they were hidden at the back, up to the drive, to the front, to gather all the stuff up, come to the office, and get out. And of course, he started shelling the area we were in. It didn't have like them, they were coming over, and we got out. There was a truck at the front, it was a big mansion at Paris, and there was a truck loading up one for 1500 weight, and I was down the drive a bit, and I was waiting to back up. But the thing was, get him to cover when the shells were coming over. We got quite crafty at knowing the sound of the shells, because if you could hear them, you were all right. It's when you didn't hear them. All you heard was a thud, and then the explosion, you see.